together this wonderful workshop. It's my first in-person conference since the pandemic. I really enjoy it. So today I'm going to tell you some ongoing effort about post-Japanese critical gaze series. And the materials covered in this talk is in these three papers, and those cannot be done with these two wonderful collaborators, Junchen Rong and Yin Su, who both of them are experts on conformal bootstrap. So just to have everyone on the same page, so the critical gaze theory that we are interested in typically have critical bosons or fermions interacting with certain gauge field, which could be U, SU, and so on, right? And we roughly know the phase diagram that is, for example, in 3D, if NF is large enough, we will get a CFT. If NF is small, we probably would end up with non-CFT. In 4D, the situation is slightly different, that in large NF limit, the theory will flow into free theory, but in the middle, we may still get interacting CFT. So I think that's the phase diagram that most people believe, but if you ask very specific questions like what are the boundaries of those conformal window, and for CFT inside the conformal window, what are the conformal data? Those are still open questions, and there are a lot of efforts using Monte Carlo, Lagrange, or epsilon expansions to tackle this problem, and recent years, I'm pretty into the idea of using conformal bootstrap to study those. So yeah, in case that I disappointed you in the late of this talk, so I just want to give you a spoiler that we haven't really answered those questions at the moment, but I think we are on the right track. Okay, so let me first start with some very basic stuff about CFT and conformal bootstrap. So we know that the conformal symmetry will give very strong constraints on the theory. For example, the correlation functions will follow those very specific forms that is fixed by conformal symmetry. The 2-point is just this Vermilion power law. The 3-point correlator will have this funny form that is a consequence of conformal symmetry. And we also have this so-called operator product expansion that's nothing but that if we fuse two operators, we will get a superposition of a third operator. And it is believed that all the information about primary orbitals that with scaling dimensions and run spins, as well as their OPE coefficients, will determine all the properties of CFT on infinite space. Okay, so the hero in this bootstrap story is this 4-point correlator. So it's not completely fixed by the conformal symmetry. The best you can do is that to show that the 4-point correlator will take this form, which with theory dependent functions, this G depends on the so-called crossing ratio, U and V defined here. So the important thing is that you can use the OPE that I showed in previous slides to calculate the 4-point correlator. So you can just choose pair your operators and do this OPE and eventually calculate the 4-point correlator. And the thing is that you do get different ways to do this fusion, and you end up with different formula, but they should give you the same results. And this gives you, you the so-called bootstrap equations. Okay, so then the idea of conformal bootstrap is really just to find a set of conformal data that solves all the bootstrap equations. It was originally proposed by Polyakov a few decades ago, but people realize that it's a formidable task because all those equations are too complicated. About 15 years ago, people came up with the idea of the so-called numerical bootstrap. That is, rather than solving all the bootstrap equations, why don't we just try to tackle it numerically? In particular, let's just try to get some constraints from the bootstrap equations. So I won't go to details about how this idea of numerical bootstrap is really working. So instead, I will just tell you what we typically can get from the numerical bootstrap. So in the rest of this talk, you will see a lot of plots like this. So and let me just start with this plot. So it's actually related to the so-called deconfined phase transitions that many people have been working on. So the idea is following. So it's a conformal. So people think it's a conformal field series with SO5 symmetry. So then you can just ask what are the possibilities for the scaling dimensions of SO5 invariant CFT. So and so here the x-axis is the scaling dimension of the SO5 vector, while the y-axis is the scaling dimension of the SO5 singlet. So and now you say there's a shaded region. So this region is consistent. I mean, after you by using the numerical bootstrap program, people can find that this shaded region is consistent with SO5 unitary CFT. But it doesn't mean that every single point in this shady region will have a CFT solution. But what we sure is that for any point outside this allowed region will not be consistent with unitary SO5 CFT. So then a theoretical expectation is that for deconfined phase transition, there will be no relevant SO5 singlet. That means if that's the case, then the scaling dimension of the SO5 vector should have a lower bound. And this lower bound is, from this plot, we know it's around 0.77. And that means the, and it corresponds to the so-called eta exponent people can measure numerically. And it is much larger than what people typically get. So that means something is wrong with this story of deconfined phase transition. There are several ways out. People have come up with various of proposals. I will not really go through those. So, okay. And another example that I showed here is a so-called Dirac spin liquid. And in field theory language, that's N equals four, NF equals four QED3. So, in condensed matter systems, there are several possible realizations of this Dirac spin liquid as a critical phase of matter. And if that's the case, that means all the operators that is singlet under my lattice symmetry, or UV symmetry, that is the SO3 spin rotation as well as the lattice symmetries, should be irrelevant. So then we can ask, if this is true, what are the space that the scaling dimensions of monopole and Fermi bilinears would live in. So this is our results. So the x-axis is the scaling dimension of monopole, y-axis is the scaling dimension of the Fermi bilinear. So we find that it's consistent with the Monte Carlo results, while the Lagrangian results, this blue dot, is not consistent with Dirac spin liquid being stable on any lattice. Okay, so such a numerical bound is what we can typically get from the numerical bootstrap, but they are useful because they provide some guidance to us that about what. So it give us some constraints about what are the possible candidate theories that people can find either numerically or experimentally, right? But we hope to get much more information from conformal bootstrap. And I guess you have heard that the one of the most successful example of conformal bootstrap is tackling the Eisen CFT. So and here, what you can consider is to bootstrap the four-point correlator of the Z2 odd operator. And then you can get some bound similar as what I showed in previous slides. So here, the x-axis is the scaling dimension of the Z to odd operator, while the y-axis is the scaling dimension of the Z to even operator, or energy density. The x-axis is just the order parameters scaling dimension. So now you can easily say that on the bound, there is a sharp kink. And this kink turns out to be very close to the Eisen CFT. It's the case for both 2D and 3D. People believe that if you have infinite numerical accuracy, then the kink will correspond to the just the Eisen CFT. And another interesting observation is that in 2D, we know that we have a family of CFTs called minimal models. Eisen is just the most special one among those minimal models. And those minimal models seem to saturate the bound, the bootstrap bound on the right-hand side of the Eisen CFT. And that is a very nice result. And what's even nicer is that if you just consider a few more correlation functions, and again use numerical bootstrap to say what will happen, and people find that just with very mild assumptions, then you can cover out even more spaces and have the allowed region to be a very small island, and with the Eisen CFT living in the island. And this gives you a very rigorous bounds for the critical exponents of the Eisen CFT. Here is a plot in 3D, and the numerical accuracy is one digit higher than the best Monte Carlo simulations. So those results really shocked the community, and then we hope that to use this conformal bootstrap to solve other critical theories. And at the moment, it seems to work well for all those symmetry breaking transitions, including Wilson-Fisher, Owen Wilson-Fisher, and it works reasonably well for some type of Gross-Noël transitions. And what I'm interested in to do is that try to sorry, you mean what?
You mean that the island, yeah, is the shrinking, can it drift if there are more operators?
Why it's where?
No, I'm asking, is there an argument saying that it will not drift?
The bound is rigorous, so if you add more correlators, it will be smaller. It could either doesn't change or become smaller. It could disappear. Hopefully not, but it will not drift.
Yeah, my question is, how do you prove that?
Isn't it obvious that the bounds from the fewer correlators should always be a subset of the bounds from the more correlators?
Basically, add more constraints, yeah, more rigorous constraints, and that can only shrink the island.
Maybe I misunderstand your question. Okay, so what I'm hoping to do is to use numerical bootstrap to study critical gauge theories and answer the questions like, what are the boundaries of conformal windows if you give me a gauge group, and what are the critical exponents, in particular those are relevant for condensed matter systems that I worked a lot on. There was indeed a conceptual challenge for people to study critical gauge theories using bootstrap. And the challenge is that, so as you can see, the idea of bootstrap is just to study correlation functions of a CFT, right? It doesn't use anything like Lagrangian or Hamiltonian, right? So that means, yeah, so for theories that we do know a Lagrangian description or Hamiltonian realization, we have no idea about how to really target those CFTs in the bootstrap setup, right? And a common setup of conformal bootstrap is that you just input the global symmetry of the theory and then choose certain operators to bootstrap. Those operators will be in some wrap of your global symmetries. For Wilson feature, we know that the global symmetry is On, and the natural candidate you can choose to bootstrap is the On vector, that is the order parameter of the phase transition, right? And for Wilson feature, we are lucky that if you just specify these two conditions, there are probably just one CFT left, and then we can get it from numerical bootstrap. But for many other theories, in particular for those critical gauge theories, if you just specify the global symmetry as well as the operator you choose to bootstrap, there's still a number of theories left. And those theories you can easily cook up theories with a different gauge group. For example, you can just, if you want to, you can just think about theory with UNC gauge group and you change NC. It doesn't really, those theories may not differ too much if you just think about its operator spectrum, right? So then the question, in other words, the gauge field don't appear in the common bootstrap setup. It doesn't appear in bootstrap equations and so on, right? So then how do we really target any gauge group or any CFT of interest? That was the, yeah.
Just want to make sure for ON, for the first and for ON, is it true that we're
if you specify a bit more conditions, for example, there is only one relevant singlet, and then the basically the island like this is obtained from this condition. Of course, we don't really know whether this is the unique one, but the bootstrap results suggest that's probably the case.
But if you do assume that there's only one relevant singlet, how many?
We don't know. We don't know. We don't.
Yeah. Do there appear to be many?
Sorry?
Is there evidence that there are many?
We don't know many CFTs, right? So. One thing you can choose to do is that you can start with, let's say, for example, if you're asking about O2 CFTs, you can start with O3 CFTs and pretending it's O2 symmetric, right? You will get a consistent solution as well, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you assume there's only one relevant singlet, then the solution, the O3 story I just cooked up will be excluded.
I'm asking because if I think of the symmetry and the anomaly, then in principle with ON there can be multiple different choices of the anomaly, but it seems there can be only one anomaly can be realized by CFT. If we are going to assume there's only one relevant singlet.
Yes.
That's... Yeah, I mean, that's just a fact.
Maybe we can discuss that, you know, after the talk. It seems like a good point to discuss.
Yeah. Okay. So so then the question is how do we detect or input the information about gauge fields in the bootstrap study? So I think for that question we find a pretty good working answer. And then in the rest of talk, I will try to convince you that that is probably the right way to go. So, to start, one very natural question that you may ask is that just for the successful story, like to the icing CFT, for the icing CFT, why do we have it living at the kink on the bootstrap bound, right? So. And indeed, we have pretty good understanding in 2D. And the appearance of this kink is related to one of the most fundamental concepts in 2D CFT that is called Virasoro null operators. And so remember that I said that on this bound on the right-hand side of this Ising kink, all the minimal models are same to saturating the bootstrap bound. So then you can just ask what will happen if we just move on the bound from right to the left, right? And we can make the situation much sharper by looking at another operator. That operator is a Z2 even operator, but it's in spin 2, right? In that channel, we know the lowest operator is just the Fermilian energy momentum tensor, right? We can ask what is the bound for the second lowest operator, right? So in the context of minimal model, we can easily write down that operator. This operator schematically looks like this. You're just applying a level 2 Virasoro generator on an epsilon operator. That's the energy density. Right. And you can write down that operator, and that operator has scaling dimension around 3. Okay. And textbook tells us that actually this operator becomes a null operator precisely at the Ising CFT. That means for Ising CFT, the lowest lying operator will be this operator that you need to apply a level 6 Virasoro generators to the vacuum, right? So then you can say that if you just try to bound that operator, there is a very sharp cliff structure that with the Ising sitting on the tip of this cliff. So, and in other words, if you just move from the right to left, this operator will be decoupled from the operator spectrum. And this operator decoupling will cause non-analyticity in many properties of the theory, or including this bound for the Z2 even singlet, Z2 even operator. And this is the origin of this kink. Okay, and the same observation actually also happens in 3D. Yeah, so this is a result for 3D where you just bound the same operator. Again, you see a very sharp cliff where is the Ising sitting on the tip of this cliff. That is probably suggesting that in 3D, there's some version of generalization of the 2D Virasoro algebra. And if one can find a good understanding, that may pave the way for analytical solving 3D CFT. That's the holy grail of the criticality property. Okay, so.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. The tri-critical Ising model, is that somewhere on that line, or is it even the same as the super Ising?
The tri-critical Ising is some place here or there.
Yes. So the super Ising is a different thing?
In 2D, this super Ising is just a tri-critical Ising.
But not in
3D. Yeah, in 3D, it's kind of different. It's like you have different ways of doing dimensional continuation. Mm. Okay, so this is nice that the kink has very important physics inside it. Okay, and now we can turn to the question that why do we have an island? And turns out the story is rather similar at this, as far as I understand. That is, as I said, if you just bound this spin 2, Z2 even channel, then you get a cliff. If you choose to bound another operator, that is the second lowest lying operator of the Z2 even channel, again, you see a cliff, but just a mirrored one. Okay, so now you can easily imagine that what if we just assume, make some assumptions in your bootstrap study, that is, you assume the first operator is larger than certain value, while the second operator is also larger than certain value, and repeat the bootstrap calculation. And then you will naturally get an island in this space, right? And what's nice about the about it is that since we do have very sharp cliff. That means the island will not really change if you change your assumptions a little bit, right? No matter, you can either assume it's larger, for example, for first operator, you can either assume it's larger than 4 or 4.5 or even 5.5. Nothing will change, right? So that is very crucial. Otherwise, we won't really say anything reliable, right? If the island would change, is sensitive to the assumptions you made. But those assumptions, on the other hand, the assumptions are important, and they do have some physical origins. Okay. So this is a story of the ice and safety, right? I guess the important message that I try to convey is that in order to target a safety of interest, we should try to make use of the informations, in particular this type of the so-called operator decoupling, right? And at the moment, we know several types of operator decoupling. One is this null operators that of 2D safeties, right? And that is responsible for the Ising kink or Ising island in 2D, right? And I will introduce that in gauge theories, we can also come up with certain type of decoupling operators that is closely related to the gauge group. And we also can have this equation of motion type of decoupling operator, or sometimes people call it missing operators. And that the last two type of decoupling operators, we can use them in the bootstrap study to target a critical gauge series that we will be interested. Okay, so
but there's also one more piece of information in gauge theories that you can use, no? Because you have conserved currents, there are some operators that are not going to get anomalous dimensions. Can't you use that also?
That's actually, if I understand your question correctly, that is actually the equation of motion.
I see.
Yeah. Good point, yeah. Okay, so but before I come to gauge theories, let me quickly flash the results of a 2D Westrum Witten safeties. So just to show that the null operators is useful, we know that this Westrum-Witten SU2 level K Westrum-Witten safety has SO4 global symmetry. Then we can ask what are the bounds for the SO4 vector and SO4 rank 2 tensor. And then you say here that we do get a kink with the SU2 level 1 sitting on a kink, and all other SU2 level K are seems to saturate in a bound. It's like the mirror version of the Ising story that I presented before. And again, the reason that we have this SU2 level 1 sitting a kink is nothing but that we are actually bounding a null operator for the SU2 level 1. Okay. So now let me talk about the critical gauge series. And the critical gauge theory that I'm going to target is the scalar QED. And this theory just have n flavors of critical bosons coupled with a U1 gauge field. And schematically, we know that in 2 plus epsilon dimensions that we will get CFT for any flavor. And in 3D, we may have an intermediate region that of NF that correspond to non-CFT, but it's not settled. Okay, so, and this theory in 3D has a lot of applications in condensed matter physics. If, for example, if NF equals 1, that is the famous particle vortex duality. If NF equals 2, that is the so-called deconfined efficientizations. For general NF, we can have it so-called SUN deconfined efficientizations that can happen in SUN magnets. And there was a nice work by Anders and Ribou on this. Okay, so this is a theory that we will try to tackle using conformal bootstrap. So now the first question is, so as I advertised, the idea to target a gauge series is that we try to make use of the so-called decoupling operator. And to think about this decoupling operator, the one way is that you just try to come up with a family of theories that have very similar properties as the scalar QED. And the natural candidate is that I just have n flavors of critical bosons coupled with a UNC gauge field, right? For scalar QED, this NC just equals 1. So then we can ask what are the operators that we can choose to bootstrap or try to or choose to bound, right? The most one important operator is just this boson bilinear as written here, that it will be an SUN adjoint. So this F is just the flavor index, this C is just the color index, right? And it's in 3D, its larger scaling dimension will be around 1. And this is true for any NC. There's no much difference. Of course, the high order corrections will be different, but that is not sharp enough for us to make use of. Okay, and since it becomes interesting if we look at a rank 4 tensor of the SUN symmetry, and those rank 4 tensors are roughly just 4 boson operators. And specifically, we want to consider a representation that has 2 upper SUN index, 2 lower SUN index. And I want to anti-symmetrize both the upper indices and lower indices. Okay, and if NC, the color group, is larger than 1, you can easily write down this operator using 4 bosons. So that is, you just simultaneously anti-symmetrize the simultaneously anti-symmetrize the flavor and the color indices, right? And then you contract the color indices to get a gauging invariant operator, right? And in the larger NF limit, this operator will have scaling dimension 2 plus corrections, right? However, if NC equals 1, you can immediately realize that this operator will vanish, right? Because I cannot anti-symmetrize color indices for NC equals 1 will just give me 0, right? And to get to write down a non-vanishing operator, what you need to do is that you need to add derivatives. And this is the lowest operator you can come up with. And its scaling dimension, its engineered dimension will be around 4, right? And now you see that we do have, for this operator, there's a sharp difference between the NC equals 1 and NC larger than 1. It's a very simple fact due to the gauge group. Okay, and we can, in other words, we can say that this operator in non-abelian gauge series is decoupled at NC equals 1. Okay, and similarly, if you want to consider other gauge groups, what you need to do is just look at much higher representations. And this, in principle, can be done. Okay, so now have identified this decoupling operator for the scalar QED, then we can just ask, what if we bound it? Okay, this is the result. The first thing, so the correlator we choose just the 4-point correlator of this boson bilinears, that is SUNF adjoint, and then we just bound the decoupling operators that I was talking about in previous slides. So now you can see that there is a kink, and this kink evolves to the cliff, right? A very sharp cliff if NF is large enough. That's very similar to what I showed in the story of Eisen CFT and also the SU2 level 1 Western Norwegian CFT. Okay. After observing this, we were very excited. But after a few days, we realized that this kink itself is not the scalar QED, unfortunately. So for example, in the larger NF limit, we can just compare the results of the larger NF calculations. And we find that the position of the kink has considerable discrepancy from the larger NF results. It's around 2 over NF. It's not large, but it's significant enough for us to say that this kink is not the scalar QED. And similar story happens if we consider 2 plus epsilon dimensions. In bootstrap, we can easily do fractional dimensions. But I think this result is also encouraging as the position of this kink or cliff is pretty close to the scalar QED. And the physics is closely related to the scalar QED, right? So it captures the essential physics about the operator decoupling. So then what we did is that instead of bounding that operator, let's just assume make assumptions about the these operators and try to bound the other operators, right? The reason that we want to make assumptions is that by making, for example, we require the decoupling operator to be larger than certain value. After making this assumption, we exclude all the non-abelian gauge theories. Only abelian scalar QED could be consistent with these assumptions. And then we can bound other operators. For example, we can bound SUNF singlet. And this is what we get. We find that this is in 2.1 dimensions. And we find that after make these assumptions, the allow region gets changed and we get a kink, and it turns out that the scalar QEDs results from 2 plus epsilon expansion, this green dot, is pretty close to the kink. And this kink, as well as the allowed region, is insensible to the assumption I made. For example, here, indeed, I showed two different results from two different assumptions, like larger than 1.2 or 1.7. So it doesn't change at all. Okay, but if we just assume this operator is larger than a unitary bound, you say they are very different. And for this, it has nothing to do with the scalar QED. Okay, so, how much time do I have?
Couple of minutes.
Okay, yeah, I'm about to finish. Okay, so this is nice. We get a kink eventually. And we hope we can do much more. That is, we want to get a bootstrap island. So since we are studying, we are only studying correlation functions, right? And any theory that is consistent with these correlation functions will be consistent with the bootstrap calculations. So then, in order to isolate the scalar QED from all our, as an island, we need to find the conditions that exclude other theories that is consistent with this bootstrap equations. So here we have a long list about the theories that we can come up with. I won't go through all the theories in this list. Instead, let me just quickly go through talk about one theory, that is the O2NF star. So remember that the scalar QED just have bosons interacting with a U1 gauge field. You can replace this U1 gauge field with some discrete gauge field like Zn, right? That is the so-called O2NF star. Its dynamics is the same as the Wilson Fischer. It's just the Zn gauge symmetry removes certain operator, gauge non-invariant operators. But if you look at the operator spectrums of, compare operator spectrums of those two theories, they're quite similar, right? So including the decoupling operators that I mentioned, right? So then how do we distinguish them? And the way to distinguish them is to use the equation of motion. Okay, so let's just look at this Lagrangian of the QED3. Right, so we can get classical equation of motion, and in particular for the U1 gauge field, we have this gauge current to vanishing. Right, that means in the gauge theory, the gauge current is actually not an operator in the operator spectrum, but for O2NF star, this operator will be present in the operator spectrum. Right, and any operator in QED. Any operator proportional to this equation motion will be absent. Then we can just use this condition to compare O2NF star and QED. Then we can find a difference between them. And I won't go through the details. It's just that the second low-lying operators in the SUN adjoint will be different for those two theories. And now we can just bound these operators. Now you again see this very sharp cliff structure with, by the way, this is again in 2 plus epsilon dimensions, that with QED, scalar QED living on the tip of the cliff while the 2NF, O2NF star is on the bottom. Okay, so then we can just impose conditions, then we can get an island in 2 plus epsilon dimensions. We can just repeat this calculations in 3D, and we get an island, but it only works for large, for NF large. So, okay, so let me just quickly summarize. I introduced the conformal bootstrap, and I talked about the relations between the bootstrap kinks and the safety's decoupling or null operators. And then we propose a recipe to bootstrap critical gauge theories and use that to study scalar QED. It seems to work well, but at the moment, it hasn't really solved the questions that we care about. And we are working on other more sophisticated calculations like mixed correlator or spinning operators, try to numerically solve the scalar QED and QED. Okay, thanks.
Can I ask? So can you explain again how did you get the scalar QED from not getting scalar QED from there? I mean, in the first place. So what was the weapon you used to improve?
To exclude what?
I mean, so at the beginning you said that the kink you found is not the scalar QED, and later you said you found it. So I didn't really get what was the difference.
I didn't quite hear your question.
What slide are you talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this
the previous slide?
This one.
The slide, yeah, right here. You said that this kink is not.
Yeah.
The QED, the scalar QED you are looking for.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And so what did you do to get the scalar QED eventually?
What we did, roughly speaking, is to impose more assumptions. Then we can get scalar QED.
So does this kink correspond to any known CFT at all, or
no? I don't think it corresponds to any known CFT. One possibility is some new CFTs with SUNF symmetry. I don't know whether you guys have ever seen it in Monte Carlo simulations. Right? The other possibility is that it's just some numerical artifact from bootstrap. Yeah.
Okay, so what is the extra assumption you made again? Can you explain that again?
We just assume that this decoupling operator will be larger than certain value, then we bound other operators. That is what we did. And then we just find it has a kink corresponding to the scalar QED. It only works in 2 plus epsilon. In 3D, again, we don't say a kink correspond to the scalar QED.
Yeah, I didn't really get so what does the decoupling operator mean? And why adding it would be better?
The decoupling operator means it's here. So the reason that we want to add assumptions in this for the decoupling operator is because we can use that to exclude all the non-abelian UNC gauge theory. So because for non-abelian UNC gauge theories, you can write down 4 Boson operators in this representation. But yes. for a billion gauge series, that 4 Fermi operators will be, probably you cannot see my laser point. So for a billion gauge series, this 4 Boson operator will vanish. So then you can only write an operator like this. So it's much heavier than the
no, but ones. Yeah, but then wouldn't it mean that the original kink you found could have a non-abelian gauge field? Could be a scalar QCD instead of a scalar QED?
This kink will not correspond to the scalar QCD because scalar QCD will living on. Oh, sorry, you cannot see. The scalar QCD will live someplace here because its dimension will be around 2-ish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see if there's one more short question. Yeah.
So thanks, Yinchen. This looks very exciting. I have a question about the monopole. So what role does a monopole play in your... So does your theory include monopoles, or can you estimate the scaling dimension of monopoles from your analysis?
So in this calculation, we didn't consider monopole. We can consider its correlators, of course, but it for scalar QED, the monopole will not help because it doesn't carry any non-trivial representation in the SUNF. So then you don't get much constraint from that.
No, in the sense that should I think of this as the non-compact scalar QED?
Yeah. Or the monopoles are still in the spectrum, right? It's just like we are considering the neutral sector under the topology U1. Yeah. The dynamics are the same, right?
So, I mean, I guess the question is that the monopoles could be a source of instability in the...
Yeah.
And so is that part of your calculation or is that a separate issue?
So you can think that we are studying a theory with SUNF times U1 topological symmetry. Mm-hmm. With that symmetry, then monopole is not symmetry allowed, right? We're studying that theory and ask what the scaling dimensions of Fermi boson bilinears and so on. Yeah.
Okay, I think there was one more question there just before, because I really want to throw this one.
Oh, no.
Thank you. And okay, I have a question on your second page of the presentation.
Which page?
Maybe second, maybe a third. The page you showed your bootstrap result on the Dirac spin liquid.
Oh, okay, that one.
Yeah, I have a question. So you have two shaded regions. One is for triangular Dirac spin liquid, and one is for Kagome Dirac spin liquid. How does living on the triangular lattice or Kagome lattice affect your conformal bootstrap result?
So yeah, on Kagome lattice, for the Kagome Dirac spin liquid, the twofold monopole is symmetry allowed, while for triangular Dirac spin liquid, the twofold monopole is not symmetry allowed. So then that means if Dirac spin liquid is a stable critical phase on Kagome lattice, that twofold monopole should be irrelevant. But for triangular Dirac spin liquid, we don't need that. So then that will give the difference in the bootstrap bounds.
I see. Thank you.
Okay, so time to end. So let's thank Inchon again. Yeah. Sure.